It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A new KFF Health News report focuses on a Wisconsin woman who was wrongfully denied insurance coverage for a life-saving abortion.
Using her middle name only, Ashley told KFF she had a condition called pre-viable PPROM. That's when the water breaks before the pregnancy reaches viability. The condition can create severe complications like infection, sepsis, and death.
Even though Ashley needed an abortion to save her life, she went through multiple appeals with her insurance company.
Every time I call insurance about my bill, I was like sobbing on the phone because it was so frustrating to have to like explain the situation and like why I even think it should be covered.
The report, which ran on NPR, shows how insurance coverage can be confusing and complex in abortion procedures.
Jenny Higgins researches abortion access as a professor of obstetrics and gynecology and director of the Collaborative for Reproductive Equity at UW-Madison. Jenny, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Good morning. It's nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. Let's pick up Ashley's story. The KFF Health News piece, Dr. Elizabeth Bennett, Ashley's doctor and clinical advisor for your organization, your collaborative. Why did Ashley need an abortion?
Yeah, I appreciate you focusing on Ashley's case. And I, of course, defer to my clinical colleagues like Dr. Bennett to talk more about the specifics of the clinical aspects of this case. Mm-hmm. But pre-prom, this issue that Ashley reported, is when the amniotic sac, when your membranes rupture early on in pregnancy, and it leads to an immediate not only demise of the pregnancy, but potential threat to the pregnant person because of a risk of infection and sepsis. So even though it's not an immediately life-threatening situation, it could be. And that is what Dr. Bennett and her colleagues were trying to respond to when Ashley reported to them for care.
What can we learn from Ashley's story here? Why was coverage initially denied?
Yeah, there's so much we can learn here and from other cases of people having trouble getting coverage for abortion care. So Ashley as a federal employee had federal insurance for her case, from what I understand. And as you and your listeners may be familiar, while Roe v. Wade passed in 1973 and legalized the federal right to abortion, in 1976, a representative from Illinois named Henry Hyde was able to put an appropriations bill in that prevented any federal funds from being used for the provision of abortion care. So this is called the Hyde Amendment. And so the Hyde Amendment prohibits any federal funds, including Medicaid funds, from being used to provide abortion care, except in certain cases, such as a reported rape or incest where there is a police report or risk to maternal life or grave risk to maternal health. So even though Ashley's case did constitute a grave risk to her health, because of billing codes and because of other challenges, the insurance company at first blush just said, no, we don't cover abortion, so we're not covering yours. So it took Ashley multiple attempts and very, very, I think, traumatic phone calls and other things to try to sort out the care she was actually deserving through her health insurance.
It's confusing to me because there is medical codes for so many nuances of conditions in healthcare. I'm wondering, does the Hyde Amendment affect how we see the nuances of abortion coverage? What are the ripple effects of the Hyde Amendment, you know, decades since it became part of the landscape here?
Yeah, the Hyde Amendment has had profound impact on not only people's access to abortion care and coverage, but the way we think of it. So while Ashley's case is incredibly compelling and important, and any individual's case is important, the majority of people who need abortion care don't seek abortion care for medical reasons, but because often for financial reasons, right? People most likely to experience unwanted pregnancy and who are most in need of financial assistance for abortion services to begin with, are then the ones most affected by the Hyde Amendment because they can't, you know, while Medicaid, let's take Badger Care here in Wisconsin, which is our state form of Medicaid. Mm-hmm. While Badger Care will cover prenatal costs and birthing care costs, it doesn't cover abortion care costs. And I think the Hyde Amendment culturally affected our thinking around abortion not being basic health care, somehow treating it exceptionally or differently than other forms of health care. When the American Public Health Association, the American Medical Association, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists all say that abortion is a form of basic health care, reproductive health care that folks need and deserve access to. So Hyde has had a profound impact on people, not only are thinking about abortion, but people's ability to get desired care.
We're talking about insurance coverage for abortion procedures in Wisconsin and beyond. Jenny Higgins is here, professor of obstetrics and gynecology at UW-Madison and director of its Collaborative for Reproductive Equity. Jenny, let's look a little bit deeper on the economic situation. I mean, you cite in your research more abortion seekers in the U.S. live on low incomes. About half live below the federal poverty level. What are the effects of earnings on abortion procedures?
Right. So let's just, I think sometimes it's useful to put an actual number when we're talking about federal poverty level. What does that even mean? Sometimes a hard concept for us to get our heads around. Mm-hmm. So for a single, let's think of a single parent, right? We know that most people who seek abortions in the US already have at least one child. So let's take a single parent. That is someone who lives below $21,000 a year to support herself and her child. So half of abortion seekers in the U.S. live below that line, and about three quarters live just a little bit above that line or lower. And there are multiple ways that poverty and abortion restrictions are associated, right? So as I mentioned, many people report considering abortion due to their limited financial resources, right? So many folks feel as if they would love to carry pregnancy to term and raise a child, but they're not in a financial situation to do that. So they consider abortion. However, those are the folks who are most likely to be Medicaid recipients or to be uninsured. And so then they're faced with an out-of-pocket expense that they might not be able to take on, right? Mm. We know in the U.S., close to 40% of people say they couldn't afford an unexpected $400 expense, right? And abortion care, while remarkably affordable compared to many outpatient procedures, is about $500 to $1,000 plus childcare costs or travel costs, lodging costs, right? Especially for folks who have to travel to care. And so the very people who be most in need of abortion services are the least likely to be able to come up with the expenses. And then the final piece of this relationship between poverty and abortion is that for those living on low incomes to begin with, being unable to obtain an abortion and going on to have a child will likely compound their financial challenges. So we see these really difficult cycles that abortion restrictions, including the Hyde Amendment, exert on socially disadvantaged folks, especially people living on low incomes.
And tying this to your research, you've been compiling interviews with women who were seeking abortions after the Supreme Court overturned Roe in June of 2022. What are you learning from their personal stories?
Yeah, gosh, these interviews are complex and wonderful. I mean, it's such an honor to talk to folks in Wisconsin who have been pregnant after Dobbs and who are navigating how to find care. And we definitely have run into folks who, because of their financial challenges, are back-ended into carrying pregnancies to term that they otherwise would not have, right? So I'll just tell you one story of this woman who we've called Laura. Laura is a pseudonym. Laura is a white woman in her late 20s. She grew up in small town Wisconsin. And while she had attended some college, she had fallen on hard times. So at the time we connected with her for our research, she and her partner had been living out of her car, but they had gotten into a car accident, which had led them to be looking for longer term housing. But they were at the moment living in and out of shelters and hotels. When she found out she was pregnant, she immediately wanted an abortion. However, she was really faced with how do I raise the funds to get this, especially since at that time she had to travel out of state
to
get
care. She's
trying
to get to Chicago. Yeah.
Right. She's trying to get to Chicago. And so to be able to find the money for the procedure, someone to drive her or get her or a bus ride to that clinic and potential lodging costs, she just couldn't do it. And so at the time we connected with her, she was in her third trimester and trying to prepare to become a parent, but just hadn't figured out yet how to make that happen. So I think cases like Laura's really show us that the Hyde Amendment and other insurance obstacles to abortion care really back end people in our country into having pregnancies and births that they would not have otherwise, which is, I think, a threat to their human rights and their dignity.
Even before the Dobbs decision, insurance coverage for abortion procedures varied a lot. In our final moments together, what is your outlook for insurers and how they will treat abortion and procedures in the future?
Yeah, I think that the Dobbs decision has put the right to abortion much, much more centrally back into political discourse, right? So many politicians are coming out in support of abortion rights who might not have been prior to the Dobbs decision. What I'd like to see more of is politicians also taking on Hyde and the Hyde Amendment, right? So until we allow for Medicaid coverage for this basic healthcare cost, especially if we're covering prenatal and birthing care costs, until we do that, abortion will continue to be an economic injustice issue, and that the folks living on the lowest incomes will be unable to afford this service. So I'm really hoping that we'll see more of a cultural shift into talking about Hyde right alongside talking about Roe v. Wade.
Jenny, thanks for joining us. Jenny Higgins, professor of obstetrics and gynecology at UW-Madison.